Welcome one and all to Life Without Consequence. My name is Davey Francis. I wrote this, I narrated this, I made this, and now I offer it to you in the form of a podcast. This is episode 5, which covers chapters 16 and 17 of the novel. To recap where we're at, Parker and Benj found themselves in possession of a teleporter. They hoped it would afford them a life that was uninhibited by repercussions. One where they could go wherever they wanted, whenever they pleased. That dream was quickly dashed upon realizing they could only go where the device allowed, and it apparently only allowed them to teleport to the inside of several locked shipping containers. They were beginning to think the thing was useless until it gave them access to the storeroom at a local pharmacy. Leaning on some Robin Hood-esque morality, they took the opportunity to steal from the rich and cleared the place out. It seemed like they were home free until Parker was caught by Nina and her partner Doug Logue. After receiving a few stiff kicks courtesy of Logue, Parker managed to escape with Benj's help. But now the police are onto them, and they need to get rid of everything they took as quickly as possible. Without many options, Parker made a call to Lenny McAllister, and that's who we'll be spending the majority of this week's episode with. As always, I want to take a moment to thank the Patreons, especially those at the producer tier like Hampus and Andrew McGuire. You guys seriously keep the lights on around here, and I will never be able to thank you enough. I think with all of that out of the way, it's time for me to introduce you to someone who has, up until now, only been mentioned. Welcome back to Life Without Consequence. Chapter 16. Lenny McAllister. To stop at any red light in Las Vegas usually meant dealing with someone begging for money. But the deluge of unfortunates that crowded the highway off-ramps was enough to make a person consider staying on for a few more exits. No matter the weather, the lines of cars waiting to pass through the toll booths would be swarmed. There were the weather-worn, sun-baked statues that stood out there every day, slowly ambling up and down the lines of cars on the toll roads, trying to make eye contact with every passing driver, hoping to wring out a single drop of guilt that might materialize itself into a dollar bill. Anything helps, as long as it comes in the form of cold, hard cash. These types were easy to deal with. You just look away and pretend they don't exist. It was a little more effort dealing with the entrepreneurs, the ones who knew damn well a sob story scribbled on a cardboard sign wasn't going to convince you to part ways with your hard-earned money. Some of them were lifers, others were weekend warriors, employed types who knew they might be able to score some tax-free income on a spare Sunday. Those people were out there to provide you a service or sell their wares. Some even tried putting on a show for you. Whether it was woven palm frond sculptures or a quick window wash that left your car dirtier than it was before they touched it, in Las Vegas, any time a car wasn't in motion, it was an opportunity for money to change hands. Some of these people even took credit cards. Lenny couldn't stand it. Most days, he would slump into the soft leather seats of his vehicle, turn up the tint on the windows, and hope no one would approach. Other days, he chose violence. "Hey, buddy!" he called out of the window of his brand new all-electric SUV at a man wearing nothing but a loincloth. The man's head slowly turned to look in the direction of Lenny's car. It was as if he'd been so still for so long, his muscles had atrophied and could no longer move with the same speed they once possessed. "Yeah, you, buddy, come here," Lenny said as he hung a $100 bill out of the cracked window. The leathery man's eyes scanned from side to side before he approached, making sure no one else had taken note of this helpful Samaritan's generosity. "Attaboy, come and get it," Lenny taunted. As the man began to smile, Lenny could see the dry skin around his mouth cracking. It might well have been the first time he'd smiled in months. The streets of Las Vegas left little to be happy about. Unfortunately for this poor soul, his joy would be short-lived and ripped away as Lenny quickly pulled the bill inside of the car before he could take it, replacing it with a chubby middle finger pressed against the glass. While Lenny doubled over with laughter inside of the ice-cold interior of the car, The victim of his cruelty stood, once again frozen, staring in disbelief. What else was he going to do? It didn't take much to agitate the hornet's nest that was the Las Vegas Police Department. They lived to break up crowds like this. He didn't dare make a scene and risk Lenny or anyone else calling the police. He stayed that way for the entirety of Lenny's drive to the toll booth, eyes locked on the car the whole time. "Ticket," said the uniformed attendant flatly. He'd purposely hammed up his laughter in hopes of being presented with an opportunity to recount the prank. Much to Lenny's disappointment, she didn't seem remotely interested in engaging with him. He rolled his eyes at her, handing over his ticket and watching her feed the heavy paper slip into a machine. 1850, she said, blindly reaching and snatching Lenny's card out of his hand. Prices for the toll booths had always been outrageous. It had been a minimum of $15 to travel on any Nevada highway since before Lenny was old enough to drive. But it didn't stop him from shaking his head in pantomime protest of the charge. Being upset about toll prices was just a thing people did. "Declined," the attendant said, her arm extending towards Lenny with the ferocity of a switchblade. "Thanks," he replied absently, not actually listening to her. Lenny tried taking his card and pulling forward, hitting the brake sharply when the barricade didn't raise and she didn't release the card. "I said your card was declined," she reiterated. The toll booth attendant was looking at him now, and she wasn't amused. "That's impossible. Run it again." "I'm sorry, but are you suggesting that I, the person who sits here for 12 hours a day, keeping this endless line of cars moving efficiently, somehow lost my mind during the interim between you and the last customer, causing me to forget how to tap one tiny piece of plastic against another? That's not what you're suggesting, is it?" She looked at the card for a name she could use. "Susan?" Susan was Lenny's mother's name, the benefactor of the card. Lenny's nostrils flared as he rolled his lips inward, briefly entering into a staring contest he had no chance of winning. Behind him, cars honked, and expletives were hurled out of the windows. The agitation of people desperate to get out of their vehicles was beginning to boil over. Eventually, Lenny aggressively flipped open the car's center console and took out the $100 bill he'd used to taunt the man in the loincloth. The woman smacked her lips. "You know I can't break this, right?" she said. Lenny let out a throaty grunt of irritation. "Buddy, you're fucking kidding me, right?" The toll booth attendant's eyes went wide as she mimed faux offense. "Hey, no need to start cussing at me. I don't make the rules here." The woman was happy to point out that she had nothing to do with this specific policy. At the same time, she seemed equally pleased that, at this particular moment, she got to be the one who enforced it. "Just take the money," Lenny said, and the woman snatched the bill out of his hands. "So let me get this straight. You just keep $1.50 if all I had was $20, he inquired while he waited for the barrier to rise. "Mm-hmm," she replied dismissively. "So why not just make the toll an even 20? She sighed, letting her posture sink as she turned to look at him once again. "Because everything in this terrible fucking world is designed to torture us, to make sure we're aware of how unwanted our presence on this planet truly is. From our first breaths until our very fucking last." The woman's candidly bleak response shocked him, stealing any snide retort he may have had chambered. All he could do was nod slowly in agreement. "Now please pull forward so I can get to all the people who are pissed off and late because a spoiled little shit made my day more difficult than it had to be." Lenny's eyes narrowed to a scowl as he pressed his foot on the gas and peeled away from the woman and her toll booth. "Hey, Siri," his voice cracked as he yelled to activate the car's voice recognition, "call bitch-ass Susan." The surface streets of Las Vegas were a mess. Unlike the highways, there wasn't any money in repairing roads like Washington or Carson. They were left to decay for years, eventually devolving into a minefield of potholes that forced motorists like Lenny to zigzag all over the road, hoping to avoid bottoming out or blowing a tire. The ringing tone hummed out over the car's speaker as Lenny waited anxiously for his mother to answer the phone. He was furious about his card getting declined and wouldn't be able to calm down until he'd given her a piece of his mind. His frustration only grew when she didn't answer, and she let it go to voicemail. "Fucking bitch!" Lenny yelled, then stabbed the end call button on the car's touchscreen so hard the entire LCD screen rippled. Lenny came from money, and had spent his entire life being babied and spoiled rotten by both of his parents. As far as his finances went, they paid for absolutely everything. From his phone bill to his health insurance, all the way to his property in Las Vegas, the latter being a rather large source of contention. Moving out of their grandiose high-rise home was his final impotent act of teenage rebellion. Lenny wanted to live on the mean streets of downtown, but had somehow never considered what life was going to be like, no longer attached to the financial umbilical cord of his family's money. Lenny didn't last a week. He had zero experience living around poverty-stricken and desperate people. The foolish boy hadn't made even the slightest attempt to hide his wealth, and let a crew of movers proudly haul in luxurious furniture and high-end electronics right in front of people who hadn't eaten in several days. Dangerous people. The neighborhood was surprisingly forgiving. They probably thought they were being set up. However, it was on the third night when Lenny woke up from dozing off on his couch to the sensation of crudely sharpened steel pressed against his throat, and then his jeans soaking with his own piss. They weren't even wearing masks. They didn't need to. It wasn't like this soft, spoiled child would do anything in retaliation, and the police would have laughed him out of the building. To Lenny's credit, he didn't tuck his tail and run back to the security of high-rise living. What Lenny did was bring the security of high-rise living to Las Vegas. His initial announcement that he was leaving home to live among the common folk at street level had ended with his parents cutting him off. Being the pushovers that they were, though, they responded to the news that he'd been robbed and still intended to stay by offering him support in whatever capacity ensured their baby boy could sleep safe and sound, an offer Lenny eagerly accepted. Security gates went up around his home, 7-foot-tall fences topped with woven razor wire that looked absolutely ridiculous, even in the crude industrial dystopia of Las Vegas. Every inch of the property was covered by a collection of security cameras. His car was fitted with bulletproof glass and equipped with auto tint. He began stashing weapons anywhere he could. Once Lenny was situated, he started getting to know his neighbors by throwing his weight around the community. His money allowed him to get his hands on things no one else could, and after a couple months, he'd successfully positioned himself as a necessary evil. Lenny didn't care, though. Not only had he showed everyone they couldn't scare him off, but he'd also made sure they needed him. Lenny tried to call his mother 15 more times before arriving back at his house, and each time the call had gone to voicemail. As he walked through the front door, he was looking for any excuse to treat someone like his personal punching bag. "Fuck, Allie, this place is fucking disgusting," he yelled into the house. Allie was Lenny's girlfriend, but it wasn't like there was much in the way of romance between them. She was barely 18 years old and had already managed to acquire a relatively healthy pill problem that, of course, Lenny kept fed. In return, she was basically his live-in maid. Lenny mumbled obscenities at the girl who eventually appeared in the doorway to the bedroom, where she spent most of her free time nodding out. To describe the girl as slender was an understatement. Allie wore children's clothes, when she wore anything, and permanently committed to fresh out of bed as a hairstyle. Allie had been gorgeous. Now she looked like a malnourished Barbie doll someone had left out in the sun.
"Relax," she said through a yawn. "I'll get to it later. Did you pick up from Angel yet?"
Lenny had plugs for all kinds of things scattered all over town, but Angel was the one he was most proud of. Angel was big time, but that also made him dangerous. The majority of his business was done within the walls of high-rise towers. It wasn't that he didn't want to move product at street level. It just wasn't worth the inevitable trouble that would come with doing so. The streets were full of desperate people, and as Angel regularly reminded Lenny, Desperate people were unpredictable and stupid. Lenny wasn't from the streets, though, and he certainly wasn't desperate. Angel knew where this kid was from, and that any trouble Lenny might run into dealing with the streets could be covered by a quick call from Lenny to his mommy and daddy. So Angel put him on, letting Lenny deal with all the types of people he preferred not to be associated with. "No, Allie, I didn't," he said to her condescendingly. "You know, buddy, the world doesn't revolve around you getting high." Everything in Allie's world revolved around getting high. It's why she put up with Lenny speaking to her the way he often did. But she was quick to stop putting up with it if he ever hindered her ability to use. "What the fuck, Len? I've been waiting all day. I'm gonna start getting sick in a couple of hours." She knew her habit very well. "Buddy, that's not my problem," Lenny said, trying to sound intimidating. Sooner than later, though, it would become his problem. Allie would make his life a living hell before she dealt with getting sick, and he knew it. The last time he'd made her wait, she started a fire in the front yard with all of his sneakers. He hadn't even done it intentionally. Rush hour had collided with a single-lane construction zone on Route 15 and turned a 20-minute drive into nearly 3 hours of stop-and-go. He'd seen a plume of smoke rising from the direction of Las Vegas while he was still on the highway, even commented on how shitty it must have been for someone. It wasn't until he finally got home that he realized that someone was him. Lenny had no cash on hand and had been planning on using his card to cover his weekly pickup from Angel. But as he discovered at the toll booth, that was no longer an option. He'd need to figure out something quickly before Allie became an issue. "TV, power on," he said as he stomped through the living room and threw himself on the couch in front of a giant LED screen. The entirety of Lenny's house looked like the bedroom of a 15-year-old. There were video games in the kitchen and bathroom, posters fixed crookedly to the wall with duct tape. Everything was filthy, with nary an adult in sight. The clever thing to do would have been continue trying to reach his mother. Speaking with her would solve his current cash flow problem. But Lenny wasn't clever. Lenny was lazy. Instead, he queued up a playlist of his favorite cartoons and quickly fell asleep on the couch. Several hours later, Lenny awoke to the repeating chime of an alert coming from the TV. He opened one eye and squinted through the digital blue light, trying to see the screen. There was a little envelope in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, illuminated in red, and desperately bouncing up and down, hoping someone would notice it. Slowly, Lenny sat up, glaring at the alert suspiciously. Nobody had his home number. Nobody except his parents. "TV, play messages," he demanded, now at the edge of his seat. The window for a video message appeared on the screen and showed a confused older woman whose eyes tracked back and forth as though she was reading something to herself, unaware that her device had begun recording.
"Lenny? Lenny, honey, it's your mother,"
she said after a few moments of silence. She spoke loudly, in the way that older people sometimes do when talking to someone who doesn't speak the same language.
"Honey, I hate to do this over one of these things, but me and your father have been talking, and we love you, but we can't enable this sort of behavior anymore. Together, we have decided that if you're going to continue to live down there on the streets, we're not going to support you financially like we have been. Your great-grandfather worked very hard to keep you and your sisters from living like that. We love you, honey. Please, we just want you to come back home."
There was a few moments of stillness. Lenny took a series of deep and controlled breaths in, then out. It was just the calm before the storm. Before Lenny exploded.
"Fucking assholes!"
he screamed, then launched the nearest solid object he could grasp at the television. A half-empty 32-ounce Miller High Life bottle exploded against the screen, splintering the image into little geometric rainbows. He ripped the baseball cap from his head and bit down on the brim, growling like an animal. Allie's head peeked around the corner from the bedroom to see what the commotion was all about, right as Lenny kicked the coffee table and sent the collection of dirty cups and dishes crashing to the floor.
What the fuck are you looking at?
He yelled when he noticed her staring. Lenny pulled his phone from his pocket and dialed the number to his parents' house with shaking hands. Just like before, the call went unanswered and eventually to voicemail. This time, Lenny left a message.
Fuck you!
Lenny roared at the phone with the lung-splitting ferocity of a 12-year-old being grounded for the first time, then pitched the phone across the room. His face had turned bright red, and channels of scarlet glowed through his thinning hair. There were tears in his eyes as he stood panting through gritted teeth. He saw tiny fireworks in his periphery and felt his entire body throbbing. Then, from the other side of the room, in the direction of where he'd thrown his phone, he heard a noise.
My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
It was a remix of Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back from the early 2000s he'd set as a ringtone. It was the perfect soundtrack to punctuate how ludicrous his tantrum was, though it did little to settle Lenny's anger as he marched across the room, ready to give one of his parents a piece of his mind. However, when he picked up the phone and looked at the screen, he didn't recognize the number. It certainly wasn't local. It began with an infinity symbol. Lenny steadied himself before he tapped the screen to answer, doing his best to throw a figurative damp towel over his stovetop fire of rage. Hello, he growled.
Hey, Lenny, this is Parker Luderi. I have a question for you.
Who? Lenny replied. He knew precisely who Parker was, but he didn't want Parker to know that.
Parker Luderi. We met a few times, mostly at Rusty's night bar.
There had always been something about Parker that Lenny just couldn't stand. He was one of those people everyone liked, which drove Lenny crazy because Lenny thought the guy looked like a junkie. He dressed like he pulled his clothes out of a dumpster, and despite the fact that Parker was almost always broke, he somehow had this cop girlfriend that was a literal 10. She was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember you,
Lenny replied with an emphasized lack of enthusiasm.
You're the moonshine guy, right?
Yeah, that's me. Well, it used to be me. Now I think I might be doing something that's more your wheelhouse.
Parker's voice was casual and friendly. He spoke to Lenny as though they were old friends, which just added to the dumpster fire of anger that was burning inside of him. Parker had called because he needed some help moving what he described as a significant amount of pharmaceuticals, something that he'd suddenly found himself in possession of. He hadn't elaborated on what constituted a significant amount, but he promised Lenny it would be worth his time. Parker Luderi was one of the last people Lenny had any interest in helping, but as he listened to the guy ramble on and on, he got the impression that Parker was a little desperate, which got Lenny thinking. He remembered something that Angel had taught him about desperate people being stupid, or something like that. He shook off his initial reflex to leave Parker high and dry to deal with his own problems, and decided that the universe had presented him with an opportunity.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I can help. I'll be over in 15 minutes.
When Lenny hung up the phone, he noticed Allie creeping cautiously across the living room towards the front door. She was holding her bag and a pair of tennis shoes.
Where the fuck are you going, buddy? He said to her.
His voice was low and severe. The outburst that had nearly sent him on a course to destroy everything in the house appeared to be over, though he didn't seem any less angry. It was as if he'd somehow learned to wield the negativity throughout the phone call.
Nowhere. Out. I was going to go try and score a little hit, Allie said, fumbling over her words.
Lenny never hurt Allie, but just like she could be irrational, he could be scary. His mood swings were unsettling, and even though he'd never done anything, she never trusted that things wouldn't eventually escalate.
You're not going anywhere, he said. Buddy, I'll be back in an hour. Clean this place up.
Lenny waited until Allie signaled her compliance, then picked his hat up off the floor and walked to the door. Parker's house wasn't far, but in recent years, the streets of Las Vegas had started to become increasingly more challenging to navigate by car. Massive sinkholes and overgrown camps now began to take over the streets and block several major roadways. It would have been faster for him to just make the trip on foot, but Lenny knew better than to wander the neighborhood at night. As he weaved through the maze of Las Vegas, Lenny tried to decide on how to handle the meeting. The transactional details of the whole thing had been kept vague, and he didn't know if Parker was expecting him to walk in with a brick of cash to buy everything on site. Obviously, that would have been the preferred option for all parties. Thanks to the perceived treachery of his parents, though, he no longer possessed the superpower that was being wealthy. He knew Parker needed things to disappear, and he called Lenny to make that happen. This made Lenny think that he was probably Parker's only option, which put him in a position to set the terms. A confident smirk appeared on Lenny's face as he rehearsed. It didn't matter what Parker expected. He'd tell him point blank that he was walking out of there with whatever he wanted, and that he'd pay for it all whenever it was convenient, if at all. Lenny glanced at his reflection in the rearview mirror and nodded slowly to himself assuredly. Parker couldn't tell him anything. Lenny was in control. Lenny liked control. If he was addicted to anything, it was feeling powerful. He wouldn't admit it to anyone, but it was why he was so hell-bent on staying on the streets. Up in the towers, he was just the next in a long line of inconsequential heartbeats, sustaining themselves on the generational wealth earned from work other people had done. Living on the streets didn't change that, but pressing himself against the backdrop of poverty and suffering helped Lenny convince himself that he was special, not just another spoiled rich kid. "Gross," Lenny said aloud to himself as he pulled up to Parker's house. The place was a dump. Lenny thought that it might have been relatively nice at one point, but that was a long, long time ago. What stood there now was the reanimated corpse of someone's dream home. The fence around the outside of the yard was tangled with yellow police tape, and it looked like someone had emptied a dumpster out where the front lawn should have been. Screens haphazardly hung from window frames, and the roof above the garage sagged like an old Midwestern barn under the strain of time. It looked like it needed to be condemned. Before he got out of the car, Lenny reached behind the seat and, after fumbling for a few moments, eventually retrieved a small plastic case that contained a 22mm pistol. If there were any cracks in Lenny's confident demeanor, having this tucked in his waistband would seal them right up. He'd never actually fired the gun before, but he'd spent a lot of time playing with it, posing with it in front of the full-length mirror in his bedroom, deciding which stance made him look the most intimidating. The gun was a last resort, but he was always waiting for the opportunity to pull it on someone and test those poses out for real. Most of the streetlights around Las Vegas were busted, and the ones that still worked were covered in decades of grime and dirt, which gave a creepy orange tint to the light they emitted. The cul-de-sac looked like a scene from a horror movie, and Lenny couldn't help but feeling like there was some kind of jump scare waiting for him as he walked between the car and the house. After climbing up the steps to the front porch, Lenny found two bare wires where a doorbell should have been. He wondered if he was supposed to touch them together for the bell to work, but decided against it and knocked instead. The last thing he wanted to deal with today was getting electrocuted. Shortly after knocking, Lenny heard chaotic noises from the other side of the door, paired with some colorful swearing. Eventually, the silhouette of a man appeared in the frosted glass of the front door. Parker looked decidedly taller than Lenny remembered. In his mind, he'd clocked them at relatively equal heights, 5'8 or 5'9, but Parker was easily over 6 feet. As the door swung open, Lenny greeted Parker with faux enthusiasm that quickly tapered off after he got a look at Parker. He looked worse than the house. His lips were split pretty severely, and smeared blood tracked from the patchy stubble Parker wore on his chin, all the way down his neck to the collar of his t-shirt. "Hey." Lenny didn't think a person could emote so much exhaustion in one syllable, but Parker had somehow managed it. "Are you okay, man?" Lenny asked. He was genuinely a little concerned. "Oh, this?" Parker said, waving his pointer finger in the direction of his mouth. "This is all totally fine." He seemed shocked Lenny had even noticed. It was impossible to miss that Parker wore a set of old-school police handcuffs around his wrists. The chain had been broken, and a small remnant dangled from the cuff on each wrist. It didn't look like they were being worn as a fashion statement. "Come on in, man," he said, and then turned to walk inside. Parker led Lenny through the house. It was one of those deceptive old Vegas homes that looked small from the street, but became cavernous when you walked inside. It felt warm, lived in, and surprisingly homey. It was nothing like the exterior had suggested. The decor gave off the vibe of being at someone's parents' house, the total opposite of Lenny's place, which had a new wave Lord of the Flies look to it. Parker pushed through a set of saloon doors into the kitchen. Now in better light, he could see that Parker's jeans were also stained with something dark and crimson. He immediately began to feel unnerved by his surroundings, a feeling that multiplied tenfold when he passed over the threshold into the kitchen. Parker waved his arms around as if he were introducing someone. "So yeah, this is all of it." Lenny's eyes grew to the size of dinner plates. There was barely a single clear surface in the entire kitchen. Everything was covered with medical supplies. Some of it had been bagged up. The rest was loose and strewn about the place. This went beyond a significant amount. This was a spend-the-rest-of-your-life-in-jail quantity. Lenny felt like he could probably have been considered an accessory to whatever this was just by answering the phone. This was dangerous. "Basically, I need it all gone, like, 20 minutes ago." The magnitude of what Lenny saw was apparently lost on Parker, who picked up a small orange capsule from the kitchen table and offered it to him. "These are good," he said. "I've had a couple of these." Lenny took the pill, but just stared at it. He felt nauseous. He'd seen large quantities of drugs before. Once, he'd arrived at Angel's place 45 minutes early and walked in on a transaction involving a kilo of speed. The look he'd received from Angel haunted him for weeks, and he made sure he was never early nor late for a meeting ever again. The thing that stayed with him the most, though, was how unimpressive it looked. The kilo was a long-fabled achievement in the world of dealing drugs, but the reality is that it was just a single hefty bag, something you could shove under a couch. What Lenny saw in that kitchen was beyond anything he'd ever imagined. "I was thinking $3,000 up front, and we'll call the rest afloat. How's that sound?" Parker said. As Lenny stared at the little orange pill, trying to comprehend what he saw, something suddenly occurred to him. Maybe nothing about this seemed real, because it wasn't. This was a setup. It all made perfect sense to him. Parker wouldn't call him, of all people, out of the blue for help with something of this scale. No functioning mind would think a single person could take care of something like this. Then there was his girlfriend. She was a cop. A detective or something. This was totally a setup, and he needed to get out of there. Fast. "Lenny," Parker said, drawing his attention back. He wore a dopey grin and was waving his hands in front of Lenny's face. "You in there? Does that sound good?" Parker tried confirming again. Lenny finally made eye contact with him. "Buddy, what is this?" Lenny asked. Parker snorted out a little laugh. "Well, I guess if you want to get down to strict definitions, this would probably be considered a drug deal." "Why did you call me?" Lenny asked. He was speaking quick and quiet. "What are you talking about, man?" There was a hint of annoyance in Parker's voice. "This is what you do, right? You're the guy. When someone needs a guy, you're the guy. I need a guy, Lenny. Tell me you're my guy." Lenny raised his fingertips up to his temples and shook his head. "No, no, 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 buddy. I gotta go. I can't be here." Lenny tried tracking backwards towards the door, but stumbled over one of the many black trash bags and spilled several bottles of cough syrup onto the black and white tile floor. "Would you calm down for a second? This is a great opportunity. For everybody." Parker excitedly raised his hands in the air. The man looked insane. "Buddy, I am not your guy. Seriously, I'm not your guy." "You gotta be my guy, even if it's just for tonight," Parker persisted. "I'm not the guy," Lenny yelled, quickly ducking around his deranged host. "I need you to be the guy, Lenny," Parker said, wringing his fists together. There was genuine frustration to Parker's voice now. He was slowly edging towards Lenny, who had instinctively backed away and found himself bumping into a large, unusually shaped object covered with a huge sheet. As he hit whatever the thing was, Lenny was reminded of his pistol and without any hesitation reached to draw the gun on Parker. That's when the lights went out and Lenny felt a strange shiver travel through his entire body. He held the gun out in front of him with a shaky arm, squeezing the grip against his sweaty palm. It was so dark he couldn't see it. "What the fuck, buddy?" Lenny yelled. His voice echoed as if he were in an empty gymnasium. And that's when the fear took over, and Lenny fired the gun. Pop, pop, pop. His ears rang, but for the briefest of moments, the muzzle flashes let him see the terrifying truth of his situation. He was no longer standing in Parker's kitchen. Lenny scrunched his eyes closed, hoping that when he opened them, he'd be back in that dingy kitchen. But when he did, all he saw was blackness. Infinite and terrifying blackness. Out of that blackness came a sound, a scratching that echoed off to his left. Lenny turned and fired the gun 3 more times. Pop, pop, pop! As the shots echoed into the giant empty space, Lenny felt something strike him from behind. A blow from a blunt object that sent him spiraling on the floor, dropping his weapon. The ground was wet and muddy. Lenny frantically felt around trying to find the pistol, but without any light, it was useless. Then Lenny saw something. His own shadow. Faint at first, but growing in density and extending out in front of him. Lenny turned around to see the source of the light, but quickly wished he hadn't. Standing behind him were 3 figures. The 2 on the left and right were still shrouded in darkness, but the one in the center, the one holding the source of the dim orange light, Lenny could see that one. It was over 7 feet tall, but stood with a hunch. The glow from what looked like a pretty average construction lamp cast shadows over massive, muscular, broad shoulders. It wore clothes, a dirty tank top that hugged tightly to gray skin mottled with scars. Around its waist hung a loose belt, adorned with an array of instruments that looked purposed for harm. It looked like a thing that used to be a man, but had become something even more dangerous. Lenny tried to crawl backwards away from the creatures, and as he did, the one he could see began to smile. It was the kind of smile a cat gives to a mouse. Its only purpose is to show the prey its fangs. Even in the poor light, there was no question in Lenny's mind that this thing had fangs. A mouth filled with carefully sharpened razors. Out of the quiet, all 3 of the things began to laugh. And Lenny began to scream. Chapter 17, Parker and Benj. Parker looked at Benj with both of his eyebrows raised as high as they could go. His lower eyelids felt like they were moments away from pulling off of his eyeball.
Benj, what did you do that for?
He asked, exasperated. With one hand, Benj pointed to where Lenny had been standing while making finger guns with his other hand.
He did not have a gun. Are you high?
Parker responded, shaking his head. There was a brief moment of stillness before Benj's face erupted in an ear-to-ear smile, and Parker began to roar with laughter. Artwork for Life Without Consequence was provided by Daniel Sewell. You can find him on Twitter at WriterDanSewell. That's DanSoule. Music for this episode was provided by me, Davey Francis. You can find more of my music at DaveyFrancis.com.